Hi, I'm James Zada, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
You're listening to Cat Tales.
Hi, I'm Cat, and you're listening to Cat Tales. If selling over a million albums of New Age, meditation and relaxation music under the name Llewellyn wasn't enough, multi-talented composer James Zada is now venturing into the world of contemporary pop music. Driven by a deep love for nostalgic 80s and 90s evergreen classics, Fame, his debut release under the name James Zada, is packed with catchy and uplifting pop tracks, all with a distinctive nostalgic feel. We chat about the inspiration behind the album, James's reasons for changing his name, and how he won awards for his new age music. This is The One with James Zada.
Welcome to Cat Tales, and how are you?
Well, I'm good. I'm very, very good. It's a nice day here. I'm in West Wales, and I'm very blessed. I live right by the sea, which is really, really nice. And we've had quite a nice day today. I think it's raining in some places, so I'm good. I've been in the studio having lots of sort of technical issues today, so it's probably my fault we've been having some technical issues. It's probably sort of overflown into your world, you know, but. So apart from that, it's okay. I managed to get the right wires all connected in the end.
Do you know, it's so great when technology lines up, and we're so reliant on it these days, aren't we, that when it goes wrong or there's a little bit of a blip, it's like, what the hell's going wrong? You know, it's so frustrating. But shall we start with where you are now? Because this is a new era, I feel, for you with regards to this new album. It's very different from what you've done before, isn't it? Tell me all about it and where it's come from.
Well, for people that don't know me, I've made my living out of doing, if you go to have a massage or you have a sort of therapy treatment, chances are it's been my relaxation music that you've been having a nice massage to. My music's used a lot for Reiki. I'm sure you probably know what Reiki treatments are. I think you're quite a spiritual lady, aren't you?
I know exactly what a Reiki treatment is. I go regularly, or I used to go regularly when I lived a little bit nearer to my Reiki master, Karen Smith. I'm going to give her a shout out because she's absolutely incredible with doing Reiki. And yes, your music has been in the background for that kind of treatment for as long as I can remember, really, James.
I wrote under the name Llewellyn, which is although I don't sound Welsh, I could put a Welsh accent on, but I don't sound Welsh, and that's because I was brought up mainly in kind of North London, Hertfordshire area, and my family tree actually does go right back to the last native Prince of Wales, who is Prince Llewellyn. So that's where I took the name from, because, you know, Prince was already taken. That would have been a cool name. But Llewellyn is, a name I used for writing all that kind of music, which worked quite well for that sort of mystical, spiritual. And I've been very lucky. I've made a living for 27 years out of it. And that's why I'm here in Wales, because I was able to live anywhere I wanted, provided there was internet to upload the music. And that's what I've done. I've been very, very lucky. And I set up a record company with a business partner in 2005 called Paradise Music. And my business partner runs it in Florida, and I run it in wet Wales. And we just, sounds like you've got a better deal, doesn't it? And we're just very lucky. It's taken off, and we're streaming particularly. People use our music again and again and again, so of course we get lots of streams, which kind of brings me what you were saying up to today, because it's given me that financial opportunity, and also with my music being distributed, to go back to what I did when I was a very young man, which was essentially pop music and singer songwriting, which I know most people sort of think it's a strange thing for a man to do in his kind of middle age, you know. Maybe it's a crisis or something. But, you know, the opportunity's there, you know, with social media, the opportunity's there to be able to upload to my distribution. And it's something I've always loved doing. I've always been a singer-songwriter. And so, yes, I was lucky enough to make a living out of music. It's kind of a really challenging thing to write songs, particularly in the time we live in at the moment, where apparently there's a bit of a sort of 80s, 90s resurgence, but with a kind of modern feel, which is just, you know, I kind of love that music. So I'm doing music I love, and challenging myself as well. So that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment. I've signed myself to my own record label, and you know, working with some wonderful promotional people, indeed like Lisa and you know Mike, who set up this interview with yourself, and lots of other people. And it's just been fun, and I'm just seeing how it goes. You know, how the journey continues, whether there'll be it'll cross over my music into mainstream radio and does well, great. If not, I'm still enjoying the journey, having fun.
Well, it sounds to me, James, that you're almost like finding yourself again. You've started off, obviously, you referred there back to the 80s and stuff, when you may have been a young man and been influenced by lots of different sounds from the 70s music, 80s music, and now you're going back to that, which is the sort of thing we tend to do, isn't it? We go back to our roots in a way, don't we? But the bit that makes us feel comfortable. Is there a little bit of that in it for you?
I think there's a little bit of unfinished business, probably, because I think when you're growing up, you know, the music industry is like no other industry. It's not like if I wanted to be a doctor, you know, if I work hard at it, or to becoming a medical doctor. But essentially with the music industry, you know, you can work years and years and years. It's not necessarily reflected on what your talent is. You just don't get the break. And of course, there's a lot of people that are around you, they don't understand how the music industry works. So they tend to be critical of you, and you can take it personally. So, you know, I think it's kind of, I always feel I wanted to be accepted that I was good enough to be in the music industry. And although I have made a living out of music, which a lot of people say it's an incredibly long career. And yeah, you know, doing instrumental music, and I've sold over 1 million albums kind of worldwide, and my music's been used in lots of television and things. It's still, for me, you know, that I kind of, it's not, you know, sort of like scratch the itch. Do you know what I mean? Being that pop star, for want of a better word. I feel I could belong in that circle. And I'm kind of just trying to see whether I, you know, a last stab at it, whether I can actually be part of it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Plus, it is unfinished business for you. So it's great what you're saying there about that scratching the itch, isn't it? And you've got that, you know, I don't know, like a you've got to do it. You've just got to solve that sort of puzzle for yourself. Why did you then, let's go back all those years, how did you end up doing the composing for spiritual music and as you say, mainly all around just musical compositions rather than voice? Why did you go into that route then? Was it just opportunity or something particular happened?
Well, I'd been doing my pop star stuff, for want of a better expression, since I was about 13. And it was really when I met my wife. I think I was about 22 then. And I kind of just didn't see any other kind of music opportunity. There wasn't any way I could imagine making a living out of music, something that I liked. I wasn't classically trained, so I couldn't go off and join an orchestra or anything like that. And what really happened at that time was I just basically gave up and had an ordinary job. I went into selling advertising sales. And I used to have that conversation with my wife saying, you know, it'd be great to do something to do with music. I thought I'd go into jingle writing or something like that. I think a couple of jingles for some magazines. I was working for a magazine company at the time. But how the journey began into instrumental music was really my sister, because she was a massager, and she used to use this music, which she used to buy from these kind of crystal shops. And she said, yeah, you know, she gave me one of these tapes. She said, "Have a listen to this." And I thought this, you know, this is such crap. this is really awful. But yet people buy this.
Yes.
people listen to this, you know. So I thought, you know, I'd have a go at it, but you know, do something which I thought was a lot better. And it started off with just, you know, dabbling. I had a recording studio, just dabbling in the studio. The music I was doing at that time, looking back on it now, was very, very basic, but it was relaxing. And I went along to these mind, body, and spirit shows. Set up a stand like the night before. You can imagine running off all these cassettes and covers with dolphins and mermaids on and sort of thing. And people loved it. You know, I sold all the cassettes. You know, there I've been trying to, you know, like literally put my music out for years and years. I think it was the first time I got actual feedback directly with the public, because my pop music had never got feedback. It was only my friends and family. But this was my first contact with the public, and they loved it. And so I did more and did more. Then I got in touch with a hypnotherapist to ask if he wanted my music behind his voice. And he said he wanted to. This is a guy called Albert Smith, of all names, a very well-known hypnotherapist, used to do a lot of cassette tapes and things to help people with phobias and problems. But he said it'd be great to do a range of relaxation music tapes. And I was well up for that. And it was a start. You know, he paid me in the early 90s. This is like sort of £300 for a buyout of an album. So I basically had £300. I used to do a bit of print broking to make the money up. But it was a start, you know, and I was doing like an album a month. And then when I started to get better known, I did some more albums. He wanted me to do some more. Then I signed to New World Music, which is it was the biggest producer of healing and relaxation music in the world. And then under that name, Llewellyn, I just became very well known. I was doing like a couple of albums a month. And then they were starting to really sell all around the world because they had such a big distribution. And yeah, I was getting a name for myself in that field. A lot of people who do Reiki, they use my music for doing Reiki attunements. Yeah. And then, of course, the students want to know what the music is. So I've been very lucky in the mind, body and spirit. You know, I've got a name. I used to work. Well, I've worked with lots of the big therapists in all the different sort of areas. You know, that was a blessing to work in doing music for Pilates, as well as doing music for Reiki and massage and all these kind of things. With crystals as well. That was interesting, working with specialists in crystal therapy to create music that resonated with the energy of crystals and things. So it was a fantastic journey. I got to meet, you know, some of the top people in the industry. So it wasn't a path that I had intended to go. It's really down to my sister just giving me a cassette tape. So that's really how I managed to do that, you know.
Amazing. So it sounds to me, looking from the outside, that, you know, I'm going back to the universe and guiding us and opportunities coming our way. And, you know, I look at it like a little bit of a spider's web. We go down a route, don't we? Then we get choices.
Yeah. But
very often we're pushed in a direction, aren't we? And it sounds to me like you were almost like pulled. This is where you're going, James. Don't care what you think. This is what's happening.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you know, I've had and I still do get lots of letters and messages all the time how the music's, you know, changed their lives. And, you know, people do, there are life-changing situations. It's a real honor. I've had people that have died to our music. And actually one lady who loved an album that I did called Crystal Angels. And my wife sang on that, like Enya. We used to overlay all the vocals. And she said, you know, that made her feel connected to heaven. And she requested to be buried with the album holding to her chest. They had quite a few problems in organizing that, you know, with the undertakers. You can't just sort of put anything in the coffin, apparently. But, you know, she's holding her, you know, copy of my album to her chest. So I don't think it gets any more incredible and, you know, better than that, really. So it has changed. There's a lot of children, specialist needs children, that can't go to sleep. My music's calmed them. And a lot of people have trouble sleeping. They use my music every night, you know, to go to sleep with. So, yes, it was a path, obviously, that was meant to be. I've had lots of carrot dangles on commercial success, but never happened, you know, just teasing me. Yeah. I've always wondered why that is. On the first day I went to work, this is a true story, I came home from work. I didn't like work very much. Imagine the first day I go to work thinking, don't like this. And this is true. There was a letter on the table, and this letter was from a publishing company, and I opened it up, and it was a song called Even in the Strangest Dreams, which I wrote when I was 18, and that's actually on the new album Fame. I've done a version of that. And Even in the Strangest Dreams, this was a letter from Word UK, who are a Christian publishing company, and they said this song is perfect for Cliff Richard. And Cliff in those days was he sold a lot of records. And I was like, hands in the air going, yes, I've been saved. I've been saved by Sir Cliff, you know, and I'm going to become a songwriter. And that's my path. But Cliff sort of, you know, considered it and reconsidered it, and in the end decided not to do it. Like, oh no. But that could have been, I mean, can you imagine if that was a hit record? Oh, that would have, God. I wouldn't have gone down the healing kind of route at all. And I was managed by some big people as well. David Stops, the manager of Howard Jones.
Yeah.
He managed me for a while. I did showcases for record companies, EMI. So it was as if, you know, this temptation, these looked like things were going to happen. They never did. And it's like you say, maybe it's fate. You know, you refer to the universe. Yeah, the universe had different ideas for me.
Two sets of footprints walking in the sand, and one set of footprints belongs to man. 'Cause you said you'd stay with me, comfort me with love when I needed you. Said a prince was gone. Even in the strangest dreams, I'll be there. I will be there. I will be there. Ooh. I will be
Hi, I'm James Zada, and you're listening to Cat Tales?
Well, it certainly sounds like that to me. It's like you've got a choice there on the table, and you go, well, you know, well, that sounds a great choice because we're living in the here and now, and all this sounds great from a spiritual perspective, but actually you've got bills to pay. So I'm going to go with Sir Cliff here. That's it. I'm going to do it. And then they go, no, we're putting you back over here. And it sounds like you keep getting put back over here because that's what you've got to do. And maybe it's because you've actually, you know, been so influential in other people's lives, like the situations you described there, that have been so important, that's actually been your path.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. But I mean, I think also I'm a lot maturer now. And it's interesting, like the songs that I'm writing now, I'm trying to write for middle-aged people, which I don't think has kind of been done before. Mm-hmm. And that's quite interesting, writing from a position of, you know, what it's like for middle-aged men, what it's like for middle-aged women. You know, it's a lot easier to write songs when you're younger about falling in love. You know, it's a bit trickier to write songs from an emotional relationship point of view when you've been married for a number of years. What's going through your mind? What are you thinking? And that kind of thing. And that was that was something that I'm trying to do now, which is to be a support in a way through the music to help people and create songs that give our generation something to talk about, which hasn't been done before. It's quite a new kind of thing.
Definitely. I think that, and actually that goes hand in hand with where your journey has been, hasn't it, with that that helping and the healing and all that kind of stuff. You're bringing it into a different format that connects to different kinds of people, you know. And what I like about it, and I've listened to the album, it's called Fame. Let's go there again. It's called Fame, and you've got two versions, I understand. We'll talk about that in a moment. But what I loved about it was the fact it had such a resonance of that sort of, like you were saying, the youth, that 80s sort of feel about it, the uplifting pop element of it, a little bit of dance in there, something for everybody. But for those people of the generation that you're talking about, that middle age bracket that tends to be forgotten.
Yeah, I think, well, this is it. And you know, people don't just suddenly want to listen to Val Dunican or Put Slippers On.
some
of us do. So we are, you know, one of the first generations that, you know, our parents didn't like loud music, but we like loud music, you know. And I think this is kind of a bit, it's something that's kind of not really being discussed. You know, I think the children are finding it hard to find an identity, because we had an identity with pop music. We could actually have something that our parents didn't like and we could play loud music. I think rap gives a little bit of that, you know, kind of with the street lyrics and, you know, maybe offending words that they use that kind of mum and dad are like, oh, you turn that off. it's slightly there, but on the whole, you know, we're kind of, for the first time, you know, it's almost like dad's listening to louder rock music than the kids are. Okay. And I think that's causing an identity problem for the children. They want to, you know, they're growing up, they want to have something, you know. And somebody said to me the other day, maybe with this sexual identity, that's one of the things that they're trying to cause havoc with by insisting that they're not male or female, because, you know, again, our generation's slightly, what is all that about, you know? Yeah. And it's like, well, we want to be different. We want to be the generation that wants to, you know, rock the boat. Whereas for us, it was music. And I think going back to the music side of it, that's still something that we love. You know, the Rolling Stones, they're still rocking away. People still go to see them. It hasn't stopped. And that's never happened before. You know, we are living in times where that is happening. You know, people love music. So like in my, I've got a song which is called Dance Now, and that's very much from the middle age point of view, saying, you know, I still feel good, you know, I just want to dance now, you know, this is my world, you know, with respect. I know I'm old enough to know better, but I'm still young enough not to care, you know. I
like it.
So that's that. So, it, you know, that is aimed at our generation. You know, we might be a bit embarrassing, but I think some of us, as long as we make the effort to try and, you know, look the best that we can, try not to do too much dad dancing. You know, it's kind of what I'm trying to do, you know, is and still be sexy as well. You know, a lot of there's in my music as well, I try to be sort of sexy and get that across. You know, I think women, middle-aged women particularly, still want to be desired, you know, but that's very difficult when they're married. How do you allow a married woman to feel desired? But that's really important, and then that brings in issues of jealousy, you know. And for the husband and this kind of thing. But I think it's very important, you know, and so I bring that into my songs as well.
Oh, it's amazing. I think it's incredible that you're actually facing some of these issues that, you're right, haven't actually been, you know, talked about really. There's so much going on for that middle-aged group, shall we say, which sounds old and fuddy-duddy, doesn't it? But really isn't, because there's that generation, as you say, really feel young at heart still, don't they? And they were the ones that, you know, rocked with the punk rocking and, you know, dyed their hair with the new waves and were the rebellious set. And then it comes to middle age, it's like, well, hold on a second, I'm not prepared to just put my slippers on and listen to Val Dunican, as you suggest.
You know,
I want to still just to feel myself, and yeah, you're right about that sort of like feeling desired and all those elements that come with being a human being. You want to do that to your dying day, don't you?
Definitely. And I think, you know, that's a subject which people are a bit uncomfortable talking about, you know, but I'm doing it through music, and you know, like if people are asking me in interviews, you know, that's my view on it, is to talk about things, because, you know, I found through friends that I've chatted to, we've had conversations to the early hours of the morning. People are very passionate about it. They find these fascinating subjects, you know, and it is something that as a society, we kind of do need to talk about it more, because, you know, as couples, we're not getting on, we're not understanding, you know, and we do need to get, particularly with females, there's no reason why they can't feel sexy. They still can't feel good about themselves. They're not meant to just suddenly sit on the heap and just wait for God. That's not what life is about. We're a lot younger. I mean, I'm sure you've noticed this, but, you know, when you look at pictures of going back to people in their 30s and 40s, they looked so old.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, whereas people today, I mean, you know, we just look younger. And the clothes that we wear, they're not that different, are they, from the dads and the kids? You know, they're sort of blurring together. Whereas years ago, you know, your dad would wear a, you know, I remember in the evenings, my dad would come home from work and he'd change into another shirt and put another tie on with a cardigan. He was very smart, you know, and he'd sit and watch TV in a tie and, you know, and a cardigan and shirt on. Whereas now, you know, dads don't do that. You know, they're into sort of just as much the sort of, you know, cool shirts and, you know, the jeans and you know, it's a very, very different times.
It is, and it's quite liberating, isn't it, to think actually you can be who you want to be. I mean, looking at it from the female perspective, I mean, you've picked up some of the themes there that are about ageing, and I mean, nowadays people are starting to talk about the menopause, for example, aren't they? And they're talking about, you know, men ageing and wearing now, you know, going out and wearing makeup or doing something a little bit different, which years ago with David Bowie would be like, oh my goodness me, good God, it's been frowned upon. So it's like now people are addressing some of those issues that before may have been considered a little bit taboo.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I wore makeup when I was a young man. You know, I was what they call a new romantic, you know. I looked a bit like Nick Rhodes, you know. I used to sort of pale my face up and put a bit of lipstick and eyeliner and that sort of thing. The eyeliner always used to run. And, you know, it never occurred to, I didn't know that they had like water, you know, ones that didn't run. You know, and with the hairstyle and all that sort of thing, yeah, I had dyed hair and things. I'm amazed I had the courage to sort of walk down the street. I mean, you know, I used to wear like a military kind of jacket and a cap on, and then my trousers, the waist would be like a mile wide, and I'd gather it in, you know, with this giant kind of string, you know, walking around with these gigantic baggy trousers, and then they would all be funneled into these military boots, you know.
Wonderful.
I don't know how I had the courage, you know, to wear that sort of thing. But, you know, I was a fan of that kind of, they call them new romantics and things. But yeah, nowadays I think the makeup is much more carefully kind of done. I mean, the girls have like these YouTube channels, which can be a good and a bad thing. But on a good thing, they're taught how to do amazing makeup, you know, and also for middle-aged women, they're there for them to use little tricks and things just to make yourself look better. And I think for guys, it's not about, you know, putting loads of colour on or anything like that. It's just little things to improve, like skin treatment, isn't it? Moisturisers and, you know, little tricks on, you know, might to bring the eyelashes out and this sort of thing. But yeah, it's all there to make the effort for your partner and to look good and feel good about yourself. You know, and if you're out and about and there's somebody attractive of the opposite sex or the same sex, whatever it is, And you find that they look at you in a way, it will make you feel good, you know. And if you're lucky enough and you get a compliment, I'm very much about that when I'm out and about. If I see a female that I think she looks great, particularly if she's a middle-aged lady, I'll tell her she looks great. And she might have her husband saying to her she looks great, but if you have a stranger that tells you that, it makes her day. You can see it, you know. Obviously, it doesn't make her day if it's like a tramp walks up and goes, "I think you look lovely."
If it's coming
from someone that themselves looks quite presentable and they might find attractive, it's a lovely thing. And, you know, we just need to learn to do that more without these hang-ups of being jealous and this kind of thing, you know. And that's also important for our relationship, because if you find that you've got a partner that is being attractive and making the effort, then you should. Keeps you on your toes and you're both looking good for each other. Right? It's really important.
I totally agree. It's amazing what impact we can have on other people as we go through life, just a smile or a little compliment or something. I mean, just as you're talking there, one thing that comes straight to mind for me is a particular moment in life. I was quite young. I think it must have been about 18, but I was on holiday with my then boyfriend, and I was in Amsterdam, and for some reason, it's such a bizarre moment. It's James, I tell you, I was just standing there. We're both looking, we're on one of those bridges, you know, the typical bridges that you see in Amsterdam. Oh, looking over the river, you know, you can picture that scene.
I'm wondering where this is going, Kat.
Is this
your confession or something that you did in Amsterdam when you were 18? It's okay. It's okay. Whatever you've done, it's okay.
I can be at peace with it, can I?
You can.
But out of the blue, this guy, this gentleman who was walking past, he looks over at me and smiles. I thought, oh, that was so sweet of him. That was nice. That all made me feel quite good. He then goes past. He then goes and buys flowers, comes past and gives them to me and says, no word of a lie, this sounds like I'm really, you know, making this up. But he says, "You're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. I just want to give you flowers." And I said, "My God, thank you. That's just so kind." And I looked at my boyfriend here and I said, "I'm really sorry. I'm actually with somebody." He goes, "Yes, I know. I just wanted to give you these flowers." And it was such an impactful moment for my life that I can still remember it so vividly now. I'm describing the story all these years on. And how it makes you feel, just for somebody else to go, you know, that you look great. I'm really, you know, happy to share that.
That's it. That's absolutely spot on. All these years later. And he just wanted to, he's noticed you, and he just, you know, he knows you're with your boyfriend. Probably you're a tourist. But, you know, that's a lovely thing to do. You know, he just thinks, you know, there's something about you, your energy picked up, and he just thought you were a lovely girl. And these are few. He's taking a risk, obviously, with the jealousy of your boyfriend, because your boyfriend might have thrown them over the bridge and chased after him or something. But again, that's down to the insecurity of our partners, isn't it? You know, and which again, we've got to make the right choice and with who we're with, because if you have a very jealous partner, you could end up, you know, with problems and being very miserable. I've known a lady who, she was when she was very young, she was stunning, gorgeous, looked like Elizabeth Taylor. And when she was just getting attention from men all the time, so her way of dealing with it was just to eat and eat and eat, and she just became very, very unhealthily large, just to deter people from finding her attractive, because her husband was so jealous.
Oh, how sad. That's so
it
sad.
Is.
You want to, you know, I certainly feel this in all the relationships I've had, that I want that person to be the best version of themselves they possibly can. And I hope that they hope for me to be the best version I can be. At that moment in time, I'm never going to look 18 again. I don't want to even look 18 again. I don't want to be attractive to 20-year-olds. I want to be attractive to people my own age. And there's nothing wrong with that, is
no,
there?
No, you want to be what, you know, you want to look the best that you can for your age, you know. And you see these programs, isn't it, where they make you look 10 years younger. It's incredible. It's not just about the physical. You know, they go through some treatments and things, and, you know, the average age is, it's actually 10 years younger than their real age. But the real serious part is the confidence that they have. It just makes them, they're standing taller, and they are happy. It's just makes them feel good, you know, getting those compliments from other people. Yeah, it's you know, and again, going back to what I was saying in my songs, I'm trying to get that across. And you know, from my experience of friends our age, you know, to try and get people talking about it. If I can, that's a kind of, in the same way that my instrumental music is healing, hopefully this will be a bigger platform for people to get talking and do those things for themselves, make themselves happier, you know, move away from this world of, oh, I shouldn't do that. Oh, you know, I shouldn't waste the time, you know, and they can also be quite unhealthy because they just lose themselves in that world of just eating and eating and eating. Well, who cares now anyway, kind of attitude, you know, and that's not only sad, that's dangerous.
Absolutely. And amongst it all, the biggest danger for me is that you lose yourself. And what you're suggesting there is that you actually go out there and you take care of the physical, and then the emotional and the mental and the spiritual bit follows in a way, doesn't it? Because you're living in this physical world. We've got to actually have interaction with people. If that's a good interaction, you feel better, and then it becomes a positive cycle, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think some of it's touched on it with people taking selfies. And I know a lot of people get criticised for that. And, you know, they can falsify it by using apps and things. But I think there is that kind of, it's coming through in a very subtle way, that people who take, like ladies that take selfies of themselves, and it's a good selfie, and they're seeing themselves smiling, and they're in a good place, they might be out and whatever, that makes them feel good. It's a happy memory of that time. But also in that present time, they look and they go, yeah, I feel good. I feel, you know, this is, I feel great. As opposed to, I'm not going to take a picture of myself because I'll just hate myself and I'll just feel even worse, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me look at this album then for you, James. We've got two different versions. I've mentioned this earlier, that you've got your album Fame, and then you've got a deluxe version. What is the difference between the two albums?
Well, the deluxe version is a lot. It's a lot. It's much more deluxe. It's got a lot more tracks. So the normal version?
The standard version.
has got 14 tracks, I think, in it. And the deluxe version's got 30. So it's like, and it's got extra new songs on there, but also it's got lots of remixes. About a year or so ago, I was working with a promotion company, and they were very much about working with remixes, which is really quite interesting. So I was having some of my songs getting remixed by like one of the upcoming sort of garage remixes in the country, a guy called Black Habit. And, you know, some of these mixes were, you know, really cool, really, really good. And I like those. So I thought on the deluxe version, I'll put some remix versions on. So yeah, there's two or three kind of different mixes of perhaps the same song. But you could make up a whole album of these remixes. Some of them are like, you'd hardly recognize the song in them. You know, they're really different. So that's very much the difference in those two. The standard album Fame, that's going to be available on CD, but the other one's just, the deluxe is just available on streaming only.
Brilliant. So it's all there for the taking. So this is going to be a very, very hard question for you here, James. What track, if you had to summarise all of this, which ones would you say are the standout ones?
Well, the title track, I think, Fame. And there's a couple of versions on that, and on the standard album, it begins with Fame and it ends with Fame.
You hear the sadness in your eyes, yet you got the dream, the money. Another time. could, he could predict. And all that fortune, all that fame, an idol in the USA. Maybe, just maybe, we'd all think twice if freedom was our prize.
I'm James Zada, and you're listening to Cat Tales. And that's really quite an interesting track because it's actually dedicated to George Michael. My vocals get compared with George quite a lot. I came from Hertfordshire, actually. He was in Bushy, which was, you know, not that far away. And we grew up at the same sort of similar time. So it was interesting watching his career, what he was doing. And very much people do get influenced, don't they, by people whose music that they sort of listen to. So I guess I picked up a bit of George's kind of vocal style. So that's the first thing that happens is people that tend to be, they listen to my music, they go, "Ooh, sounds like George Michael." Yeah. And I take it
as a compliment.
When they say I sound like Timmy Mallett, I obviously don't. But
definitely not.
With George Michael, you know, because he was a fantastic vocalist, brilliant songwriter, and everything he did was kind of cool and with a certain sense of quality. Yeah. And I kind of admire that, and that's what I want. That's what I kind of, you know, I want to do myself. So Fame is written about George, and it's got references. It's all about his life, which is kind of a sad life, and it references him as well, sort of dying on Christmas Day. So it could be a Christmas record, couldn't it?
And
It's been 5 years this Christmas since George has gone. So it's quite nice timing for that. And the so you've got like the radio edit, which is what the album opens with. And then the last track, I wanted to do a very emotional kind of version with like an orchestra. And because of the pandemic, I was very lucky. There was, I can't pronounce his name, it's Ricky Mazzamero, I think. He's Italian. But because a lot of these studios were closed, they were going online and looking for work to be done over the internet. And his studio is this beautiful studio right next to the Colosseum in Rome. And I had the audacity to contact him and say, you won't be able to record some strings. Yeah, I can do that, he says. And I said, also, you couldn't get hold of a gospel choir. Do you fancy having a gospel choir singing? And he was like, yeah, we could do that. He could get hold of three gospel singers and sort of multi-track them. So there's this beautiful production of this song Fame at the end, which is like orchestrated with strings, and then this gospel choir come in right at the end. It's really proud of it. It's really kind of cool. And also the song, we did a video, really cool video, which is still being put together at the moment, but we filmed it at Aberystwyth University in the big concert hall there. They were lovely. They let me come over and use the services for free, you know, for the, they're now going to get inundated with all these other bands going, I hear you let people come and use your concert hall for free. They'll be in trouble now for that. But we went over there and there was a lovely grand piano and we sort of did this kind of really cool lighting. So yeah, Fame is originally the album wasn't gonna be called Fame, but because that was becoming such an important song within the whole of the album, funny enough, it feels right to call it Fame now.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. I love the idea that you've done two different versions as well, you know, which make it feel very, very different, doesn't it? You know, and it's that, again, where you're coming from makes it, can go in this direction or that direction, add a little bit of this and a bit of spice of that, it's something completely different.
Yeah, definitely. The song is about fame as well, which is that question of freedom, you know, sometimes. And again, you know, reflecting on my life, you know, and saying this is kind of unfinished business, maybe on some kind of higher level, this is what was better for me, you know, because, you know, why would I want something that essentially could imprison me and take away my freedom? You know, we have this idea of what we think fame and fortune is like, and it's clearly not, you know. And
from what you expect.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm assuming that you have chosen to do this under your own name because you want that definitive, you know, distinction between this kind of music and this direction, your sort of like your commercial pop stuff compared to the spiritual music that you, under the name of Llewellyn, that you're used to producing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could call myself Llewellyn if I did, and this music all got put on the same thing as Spotify and that, it would yeah, it's a different style, although some of it's relaxy, which just mess things up a bit, you know. So yeah, I mean, my real name isn't Zada, but like a lot of people, like, you know, Cliff Richard isn't Harry Webb's real name, or, you know, and Elton John's, that's not his real name. So I kind of was looking for a very spiritual name that's got a vibration for communication and getting out into the world, and something a bit cool. Zada sounded quite cool to me.
Oh, Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you.
Keep in touch, James, won't you?
I will do. All right. Lovely chat. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Cat Tales with me, Cat, and my guest today, James Zada. The tracks featured are Even in the Strangest Dreams and the title track from James's album Fame, which is available in stores and digitally on all main streaming and download outlets. Visit jamesada.com for more information, and to listen to this again and to other tales, visit cattails.co.uk.
You've been listening to Cat.